So the topic of this podcast is spiritual emergence and spiritual emergencies. Two very interesting terms. Spiritual emergence refers to a psycho-spiritual process when a person begins to experience his or her spiritual nature emerging and affecting their perception of the world, the perception of themselves, and how they interact with themselves and the world. A spiritual emergency occurs when the transformation that's taking place through the spiritual emergence gets too intense, that it creates a psychological and sometimes physical disturbance that can be quite difficult to deal with. Sometimes spiritual emergencies are small, that they can be dealt with relatively simply. Sometimes they become very complex and very difficult to manage. And we'll talk about resources to deal with this if this is happening for you or somebody that you care about. I think it would be good to start this conversation by talking about a client I had, and she had a very powerful and difficult spiritual emergency. And after that, I would like to go into taking a look at the psychology of what was involved, what actually created the problem for her, and how it was resolved. So I'll call her Mary. That was not her real name. And Mary went to California. She was living in the South somewhere. Went to California to do a 9-day intensive with an associate of mine, working intensely with sound frequencies, light and sound machines, other methods to accelerate psychological transformation. About halfway through the 9-day course, she slipped into a different vibratory field that she experienced as Mother Mary, the mother of Jesus, the Madonna. And it was quite a transformation because as she was walking around the campus, people would encounter her and have transformational experiences. Some of them had physical healing. Some of them had emotional healings. My associate kept getting reports from the class that this was a very powerful healing experience for them. So when the class ended, she went to the airport to fly back home, and she was in the bookstore, the gift shop in the airport, and saw a magazine with her name on it. It was a Rolling Stone magazine, and the name was clearly on front, Madonna. But this was not the Madonna, the mother of Jesus. This was Madonna, the rock star. And because of her egoic structure was too fragile, she slipped from Mary, the mother of Jesus, to a very different archetype, and to a rock star named Madonna. To complete the transformation, she bought a pair of sunglasses, entered the plane, sat down. As the plane was gaining altitude, she saw on the wings demons trying to crash the plane. This, of course, was a psychological delusion. She took off her shoe, one of her high-heeled shoes, and started banging on the window, thinking she could break it open, and somehow managed to get through the small opening onto the wing to get rid of the demons. Well, of course, the flight crew came in and constrained her. When the plane landed, she was escorted to the nearest mental facility, and she remained there for 5 days. During that time, they gave her antipsychotic drugs, and eventually her delusion dissolved and went away, and she was released and she went back home. But she was not the same person who left, and her husband was extremely aggravated and pissed off about this and called my associate and said, if you don't resolve this issue, I'm going to take you to court and sue you for everything you've got. So he called me from California. I was in Chapel Hill, North Carolina at the time. And he said, would you please work with this person? And I said, sure. So he gave me her phone number. I called her. And she and her husband came up for a weekend, came in late Friday. I worked with them Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the first session was, of course, collecting the information of what had occurred, what her experience of this was. And it turns out that she felt totally lifted up in this experience of the numinous experience with Madonna, the mother of Jesus. And she felt peace and love and things she normally didn't feel. And she felt that people were coming up to her, drawn by the magnetism and receiving healings from through her, not from her, but through her. And everything was fine until she started to go home. And when she walked into the airport and went to the gift shop and saw the Rolling Stone magazine with the picture of Madonna, and her name was Madonna, her ego flipped into this archetype of the rock star. And as I said, she purchased a pair of sunglasses, went onto the plane, tried to get the demons off the wing. She was constrained. She was taken to a mental institution. And for 5 days, it took 3 days probably for the psychotic drugs to really have an effect. And then she was released and went back home in a state of very, very confused state of mind. At one point toward the end of that very first session, she said, "I have a confession to make." And she said that years ago, she was working in the family business, which was a furniture store, and she hated it. She didn't like working there. She didn't like working with her family members. And one night, when she closed down the store, she set the place on fire and burned it to the ground. Her husband, upon hearing this, had a stricken look upon his face, understandably. And it was a tremendously charged moment. And I gave them some suggestions on how to communicate their feelings around this when they were home and then come back the next day and we would process what had occurred. So they come back the next day, which is a Saturday, and they seem to be at peace. The angst is gone, and she explained that what happened was that she told her husband the details of it, and he authentically forgave her. And that act on his part of forgiving her for something that was so horrendous lifted a burden, and she came back to herself. So as I was talking with her about this, it became fairly clear to me that the first part of her experience was what we would call a spiritual emergence. This is when her spiritual aspect, which had identified with Mary, the mother of Jesus, began to express itself through her. And she was having these spiritual qualities, love, compassion, grace, power of healing. And these flowed out of her spontaneously and very easily because she was in that vibratory field of the Divine Mother. However, when she went to the airport and saw Madonna, the rock star on the Rolling Stone magazine, and became that, she had shifted energetically to a whole different domain of energy. And that was a spiritual emergency. And it escalated to such a point that she tried to break the windows of the plane and bring it down to save them all from the demons on the wing. This is a very extreme case of a spiritual emergency. Not all of them are anywhere close to this. Some of them are, but many of them are not. But what was critical in this was what caused the spiritual emergency. And I think that what occurred was when she went into the airport and saw the different Madonna, she flipped into that reality because she had no egoic strength structure that could hold her in the vibratory field of the Divine Mother. So all her stuff came up, her unconscious, unresolved issues, which we all have, came up like out of the toilet, backing up. And it turned into a catastrophe, and she had to be hospitalized in order to bring her back to some semblance of balance. So the spiritual emergency, again, I want to emphasize, was a result of the intensity of the emergence and her past history, her ego, egoic issues, her inability to speak the truth to her husband about how much she hated working at that store. Instead of being authentic, she took the coward's way out and she burned the place down. And what was odd in all of this was that in the midst of this angst, in the midst of this turmoil, when her husband forgave her authentically, it released the burden somehow for her, and she was able to come back to herself in a more authentic way. So let's take a look at this phenomenon that just took place with this client through the lens of Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Maslow was an American psychologist, and he developed a system, a way of looking at needs. And it was at the time it was a breakthrough, because up until then, psychology was really concerned about just keeping people as comfortable as possible, being neurotic, and sometimes worse mental states. He pointed out there's higher levels of human actualization. And this lens, this way of looking at it, has five levels, and it is often depicted as a pyramid. At the bottom of the pyramid, which is the base, the foundation for everything else, are physiological needs for food, water, nutrients, things like that. Without that, the higher aspects of human expression really can't take place, because you have to make sure your physiological needs of your body are taken care of. The next level up from that are our needs for safety. We are genetically wired to seek safety. This includes shelter, not being attacked, being in a harmonious environment. Then from safety, we move up into what's called love and belonging, which is the feeling that you are loved or appreciated, and that you are belonging to a group. And we are mammals, we are primates, and all mammals and primates tend to cluster in groups, and the group dynamic is important. Not all mammals, I'm going to be clear, not all mammals do this. Some are very much loners. But many of us are connected to the herd, the pack, whatever you want to call it. And this love and belonging is a segue into an aspect of love that the Greeks identified as philios, meaning brotherly love. So brotherly love does not mean love for one man to another. It's just a general term that applies to all relationships. And so when love is expressed in our relationships, it increases the positive dynamic of that relationship and opens up opportunities that wouldn't be there if we were not in that type of loving relationship or caring. When these first three levels, the physiological needs, our safety needs, and love and belonging, which is a form of philios, are in place, the next level of our needs can express itself, called self-esteem. So we cannot have authentic self-esteem if we are impoverished in the lower three levels. If our body is not getting what it needs nutritionally and in terms of air and water, then that's going to be a problem. If our safety needs are violated through violence in the family or perhaps violence in the community, that's going to create a problem. And then we have love and belonging. And if we don't have that, if that's not part of our inherent experience of ourselves, then our self-esteem is not going to be able to emerge properly. Finally, the fifth level he calls self-actualization. And this is where it gets most interesting, because this is where spiritual emergence occurs. Normally in our day-to-day life, we do things that we want. We reach for what we want, we make it happen. We might share it with others, but essentially it's mine, this is mine, I'm doing this for me. When the spiritual nature begins to emerge, that starts to morph or change. And the person begins to experience wanting to take care of situations, not just for their own benefit, but for the benefit of others. And then there may be a quality that also emerges of what we would call unconditional love. So this person who may have been very contracted before and really was very narcissistic and only interested in what they wanted, suddenly finds him or herself expanding into an emotional state they're not familiar with, which is they're in love with the cosmos. And they recognize at a deep, fundamental level that this human existence is a rare and precious experience, in spite of all the difficulties. But if a person is not prepared for a spiritual emergence, there is no context for it, it could create some problems of self-identity. Who am I? Why am I changing? What am I changing into? So this self-actualization of the spiritual nature expresses itself as agape, another Greek word for love. And agape is divine love. It is the love of the spiritual realms. It is the love that emerges from your own spiritual nature. And so this is what shifts the process of the psyche from self-actualization to self and other actualization. We begin to be aware of the interconnectedness of all life, and that begins to change our behavior. So this agape is very interesting in that is the impetus for the emergence of our spiritual nature. And I've been working in this field for like 40 years. And what I find interesting is sometimes these spiritual emergencies, seem to occur in a timed way. It's almost as if the destiny of the person was laid out, and at this point in time, something would open and it began to emerge. And it reminds me of a coconut. And in some of the ancient traditions, especially out of India, coconut is used as a symbol of the ego and the spirit. So the coconut has this hard husk shell that protects it, but inside is the kernel and the water. And this is what grows. And when the coconut is planted, that inner sprout begins to push against the walls of the coconut, and the coconut splits, and the sprout rises up and becomes a coconut tree. But I would think that if a coconut is cognizant and aware, it must be very distressing to suddenly experience yourself cracking and something emerging out that is not you. But of course, if the perception changes and you identify with the sprout, the new life that is pushing up against the protection of your ego, and it begins to split, it won't be so much a disturbance as amusing. It really is amusing to watch our reactions, our resistances coming into play as this power begins to emerge out of what we thought we were into something that we don't know what we're becoming, but it has a signature of agape, divine love, deep gratitude, deep appreciation, a sense of peace, and interconnectedness with all life. So that is how I conceive of this after working in this field for 40 years, and we all are coconuts. We all have these structures that we built to protect our self-identity. And in the spiritual emergence, that just starts to change radically because who we think we are shifts from the hard husk, how we're rigidly holding something in our lives or in our bodies, in our relationships, and that begins to loosen and something new emerges. So it's a beautiful experience. If it does not become too intense and become a spiritual emergency. So that's the terrain that's very crucial for us to pay attention to, is this transition. Is it just going to be a spiritual emergence that becomes beautiful and full and glorious, or will it also be some difficulty when our egoic structures, our body holding patterns react to something new emerging out of us? So I'd like to switch now to a spiritual emergency I experienced in my 20s when I was a student at the University of North Carolina in Greensboro. And I would go to class, but my passion was not so much academics as the mystical traditions of the world. I started deeply going into mysticism, Christian mysticism, and then it became an exploration of Hinduism and Taoism and Tibetan Buddhism and Egyptian alchemy, and I was immersed in this. I couldn't wait to get home from my classes so I could immerse myself back in this knowledge, and I was practicing techniques from every tradition I could get my hands on, but I was not doing it wisely. I did not have anyone with me to guide me. Oh, Tom, you don't want to do that. Maybe that would work for you. I didn't have that. I was in isolation. And looking back at it, I had quite a bit of hubris in my early 20s. And I thought I could storm the gates of heaven and get the prize. And of course, in this view, heaven is not something outside of us. Heaven is actually the higher chakra system in our body. And we'll get into that more in a moment. But I was immersing myself in all these techniques. I was going through meditation practices that were very powerful. And it culminated, well, let me say that this was the spiritual emergence. I was so turned on by this whole new field of knowledge, and I was becoming more enlivened. And the critical juncture took place during a spring day when it changed from a spiritual emergence into a spiritual emergency. I was in the quadrangle, and there were high-rise dorms all around me, and people were out playing. And it was sunny, it was really nice. It was also just before exams, so there was a lot of anxiety in the air. And I was sitting there and I decided to practice one of the little things that I had discovered out of Kundalini Yoga. And all of a sudden, as soon as I entered that state of mind, I felt a sharp, intense vibration at the base of my spine. It shook my body and it became very hot. And whatever it was started to shoot up through my spine into my brain. And my brain was on fire and every cell of my body was vibrating with this very fast rate of speed that I had never experienced before. And I looked around and I had the perception. This is a subjective perception. I'm not saying this is what I actually truly saw, but this was my perception. I could see through the walls of the dormitories, and I could see the students inside struggling, and some of them happy, and some of them suicidal. The whole cascade of human experience was right there in front of me, all around me, and it became too much. And all of a sudden, I became so hot and nauseous and sick, and I knew I needed help. So I staggered to my feet and walked to the student health center. And on my way there, I passed some friends who were going to the cafeteria. And they said, would you like to join us for dinner? I said, I'll catch you later. I have something I need to do. And what was weird in that moment was I had the distinct impression that they were in a movie screen, that they weren't actually real. I knew they were real, but my perception was that they were in a movie and I couldn't get into the screen. I was outside the movie screen where this was taking place. So I finally get closer to the medical center and my legs become very weak and I can hardly walk. So I'm on all fours crawling to the health center. And finally, my legs completely gave out and I had to crawl in just using my arms. I get into the reception area and a nurse takes my temperature and turns ashen white. She runs to get the doctor. He comes and takes a look at me. And they put me in isolation for 5 days. What was interesting and helpful in this situation was all I reported was that I had a fever and I felt bad. I didn't tell them that I was sitting in the quadrangle and a serpent came up my spine and into my brain and every atom of my body was vibrating because this is crazy talk. And if I had shared that, they would have probably put me in a different wing of the health center, the mental wing. But instead, I was presenting a physical issue. And so I was put in isolation for me to help to get through whatever this was. It lasted for 5 days. And in that 5 day period, there were many things that happened. But two of the things that stand out. The first one was my bed turned into a raft and the room filled with water. So this is a hallucination, but I saw it with my eyes open. So it was a very strong hallucination. And a giant squid would try to pull me off the raft of the bed into the water using his giant tentacles. And from a psychological symbolic perspective, it's fascinating because the water is a symbol of the emotion and the unconscious. And the bed is the raft, that's my safety, and it's trying to pull me off this creature that is not human, is pulling me into the water. So this is related in terms of brain physiology to the limbic system of the brain, sometimes called the lizard brain. And so this aspect of my brain, from my understanding, presented itself as a symbol. And the symbol became a giant squid. And so it was almost as if some aspect of the deep unconscious was saying, oh, hold it, boy, hold it a minute. You have to deal with some stuff down here in the lower levels of your brain where you've been traumatized, and you're going to have to deal with this, or you're going to have to wrestle with the squid for the rest of your life. Eventually, the squid disappeared, the water disappeared. Toward the fifth day, I was normal, quote unquote, a normal neurotic 20-some-year-old student, an undergraduate. The other thing that was interesting was that many times during this period, I experienced myself being on the desert driving my grandfather's 1949 Ford. So this was interesting because I was born in 1949. So here we have another hallucination in which I'm driving this car that is my grandfather's, but happens to be the year that I was made. And off in the distance is a pueblo. And I know that in that building is someone who will tell me the secret, what I've been looking for. But as I get closer, it hops away, hops across the desert like a Mexican jumping bean. And I never, ever get there. And then the experience is over. And it took me several months to reconfigure myself so that I could function normally, quote unquote. And that was because, again, I had no one to help me. I was on my own and I had to put myself back together again. And so that was a spiritual emergency. So I have a personal experience of this terrain, and it's a very sobering level of human psychology, and it's also full of potential and wonder. But the thing is, how do we manage spiritual emergence in such a way that it becomes, it enhances us and doesn't become a crisis, a spiritual emergency? So that's part of what I want to look into. Then there was a third person, and he was a businessman, had a very successful business, and he was part of a group. And he started having a spiritual emergence that was very powerful. And he began to experience unconditional love for everyone that he worked with, including the lowest people in the organization. He began to become less confrontive and more kind. He became more generous than tight. And this concerned those around him. They got very upset with him for changing so much so quickly. And eventually he was fired. It reminds me of a statement from the mystery schools, back the ancient mystery schools of Egypt and Greece. And there was a line that said, know thyself and remain silent. Know thyself, which means know your full self, including your spiritual nature, and be quiet about it, because you need to not share it with just anyone, because not everyone is going to be receptive to a spiritual emergence. So he lost his job because of an increase of love and appreciation and cooperation. Weird, isn't it? But it's what happened. So it's important, if you are experiencing a spiritual emergence, I advise to be careful who you share this with. And it would be very good to find some friends or someone to share this with that you could have self-reflection about. But be careful who you share this with, because there are some people that simply are not interested and become quite agitated if you threaten their egoic structure with something as pervasive as unconditional love. Then there's another aspect that I think is important when we talk about spiritual emergence. And this goes back to another Greek word for love called eros, sexual love. It's been my observation that when spiritual energy begins to emerge, there is often an increase of sensuality. The senses become refined, heightened, and there is an increase of endorphins, an increase of pleasure and bliss, and this can easily be confused with sexual energy. And part of this has to do, I believe, with our cultural block and fixation on sex as bad. Because we are, at least in the United States, inheritors of the Puritans' belief systems, which is that physical reality is bad, sex is bad, and you want to keep away from it as much as possible. But it can create a conundrum for someone if they are experiencing spiritual emergence and they start to feel turned on physically, sensually, perhaps sexually, and they don't know what to do with it. That can be an issue, a big issue for some people. So this is when it might be helpful, if you are experiencing something like this difficulty, to find an experienced guide, often a therapist. But if we talk about therapists, we need to be very clear about what type of therapist you would want to see and which type of therapist you would want to avoid, because we're not all the same. We all come from different philosophical positions, different views of how physiology and our mental experience interconnect. Some of us are more gifted than others. Some of us look at things through the lens of egoic structure, and that's it. So if you went to such a therapist and started talking about spiritual things that were happening for you, they were in their mind would put you in the classification, nut job, because they don't have the foundation in their own experience to relate to what you're trying to share. So it's very important to keep this into consideration. So if you are experiencing a difficult emergence and it feels like there's too much too fast, it might be helpful for you to find a therapist who understands the territory. So my suggestions would be that you interview a therapist. Don't just jump in to a relationship with him or her. Ask questions. Ask if they are familiar with spiritual emergence and spiritual emergencies. How much experience do they have helping people through this passage? Do they consider such experiences to be a higher potential for brain and human development, or do they look at it as a pathology? These are crucial questions, and if they give the wrong answer, hit the road, Jack. Find another person to work with. There are a growing number of therapists that are waking up to this non-ordinary transpersonal aspect. In fact, some therapists use the term transpersonal psychologist because that's what they deal with, is the interface between the personal reality and the transpersonal. So if we look at this dynamic of when a spiritual emergence becomes a spiritual emergency, it's because too much content is coming up from the personal. Issues in the personal life have not been resolved and they are being rooted up, so to speak, as the spiritual emergence becomes stronger. From the standpoint of Kundalini Yoga, because I mentioned that earlier in an experience I had when I was an undergraduate, the seven chakras are a complex system of vibratory fields related to different experiences that we have. So the Muladhara, the root chakra, is about safety and physiological needs. And then the power center, we have the sexual center above that, and then around the solar plexus, that was a Freudian slip, around the solar plexus, there is the energy of making things happen. And then the heart has to do with love, love of oneself, but is also the opening portal into spiritual emergence, because it is through the heart, usually, that the spiritual emergence begins to come forward. Then the throat center is about speaking our truth and the power of language. And then we get into the third eye, and then we get to the crown, which is the transpersonal portal into the spiritual domains of our being. But if we have issues from, and everybody I know has issues, we all have them. It's part of the human experience, for better or worse. If those issues, it's like clogging the drain. So you think of the chakra system as this conduit, and if there's stuff being held energetically in one of the chakras, and sometimes in the other parts of the body as well, the feminine power that is Kundalini Shakti is going to move through all that stuff to get to the crown, into the transpersonal, and reconnect you to the source of your being. That's the rise of Kundalini Shakti. And so if we have personal issues, that transit into the transpersonal could be affected in negative ways. That's the only reason I see to go see a therapist, is if you recognize, oh yeah, this is too much for me to deal with. I need help. So there is a growing awareness among the therapeutic community that the transpersonal is an important element. And there is something called SEN, S-E-N, the Spiritual Emergence Network. And this is a group of, it's an international society of therapists who are familiar with, who have been trained to deal with the transpersonal and the personal and how to guide someone through a crisis when a spiritual emergence becomes so strong, it becomes a spiritual emergency. And they have a website, of course, called spiritualemergencenetwork.org. So you can go there and find therapists, perhaps in your area. I myself am not a member of this organization, but I think it's a very good contribution to our collective. A lot of therapists who work in the transpersonal realm and do the type of work I do with spiritual emergence and emergencies are not members of the network. They may have other smaller networks that are connected to peers and associates. But the main thing is to find a therapist who resonates with you, who you feel rapport for, because it is the rapport that's the nest, so to speak, of which this new version of yourself can emerge. And if there's not rapport, that ain't going to happen. So if you don't feel rapport with the therapist you're interviewing, I would say thank you for your time and I'm going to go find somebody else. So I don't want to give the impression that all spiritual emergencies are as difficult as the transitions that I shared. Some are minor, but they create a difficulty for the person in order to regain a sense of balance as they open up to this larger version of themselves in which their spirit is self-actualizing through their body and mind. That's a remarkable transformation. As I said, the signature of this spiritual emergence is agape, the Greek word for divine love. And there are many qualities that this vibratory state of divine love has. I think what I'd like to do is to end this conversation with the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. I was raised Christian, but then I switched my views as I started to explore other mystical traditions of the world, so now I'm more universalist. I look for where does agape show itself in whatever religion or spiritual tradition that I'm looking at. That is what I'm interested in. And so many different spiritual traditions have their form of agape. It takes the clothing, so to speak, is different. It's based on the culture, the civilization, the mores of where this religion or spiritual tradition emerged. But the seed, if it's agape, then I consider it to be worthy of being looked at. So the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi is a very interesting example of a spiritual emergence becoming a spiritual emergency. For whatever reason, St. Francis was born into a rich family of merchants. He began to have an emergence of a spiritual nature, an experience of pure agape, love for animals, love for humans, love for the world. He left his family of wealth and went off into the wilderness to pray and to meditate and to be with nature, and was very, very upsetting to his family and created quite a bit of conflict. He later began to experience many of the mystical signs, the siddhis that yogis and yoginis experience out of India. So he was a very highly evolved being, and he composed a prayer. And that prayer, for me, captures the essence of agape, which is why I'm sharing this at the very end. I wrote some music around this prayer, and so that's what you will be hearing. But the words are those of St. Francis. So I invite you to close your eyes if you want. Don't have to. Put your awareness in your heart center of your chest. You don't have to. You could just listen to it. But if you put your awareness in the heart chakra, in the center of your chest, you might have a more powerful experience. So I'm going to move now into the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, and thank you for listening.
let me give hope where there is darkness. Let me show light where there is sadness. Let me bring joy. Grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, or to be understood as to understand.